baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good morning and welcome to the walk-off on a Friday. It is show day here. My name is Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack.
Can I stop you? Can I, before we get into it, yeah. Halloween is on Monday.
Yes.
I have got a Halloween costume, okay? Can I pop off screen and just add this, see what you think of it?
I can't wait to see what you've got.
All right.
What you've got going on here. For those of you in audio land, this is really the biggest twisting of the knife, if you will. Because Adam Mack getting his Halloween costume on.
Ta-da! I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz. What do you think?
Yes, that nose, buddy.
I even put my hair up behind me so you can't see the flow in the back. Taking our daughter trick-or-treating. My wife is dressing up as me, and I am dressing up as you.
So. Well, you look good, bud. You look
thank
great.
Thank you so much.
There you All go. Right.
Let's get into baseball talk, shall we?
Yes. For those of you on the audio side, you're just going to have to imagine the fact that Adam has glasses and a big nose on right now.
We're twins.
We're twins. We're exactly the same. And holy
except
crap.
I don't know about the Eugene Levy eyebrows. These aren't. I should have trimmed these down a touch.
Yes. Those aren't Belford eyebrows at all, no, but that's all right. Not. Okay. First of all, before we get into a very big show, baseball finally back after a week of rest for these teams going into the World Series. But we've done very well on the interview side of things, buddy. It's kind of nice to be sitting down and talking to ball players again. This is something that we did substantially over the last offseason. And I know that our interviews kind of became mostly analysts and, you know,
TV personalities,
over the season. But it's really great to be sitting back down with ball players again. I know that we had a good chat with TJ Brock of the Vancouver Canadiens, one of only three guys in the Blue Jays organization, by the way, outside of Jordan Romano, who hits triple digits with his fastball.
He is
throwing 100. And that interview was really cool. And he even gets into when he finally did. He said the breaking point was hitting 99. Once he hit 99, he was like, oh, yeah, I can hit triple digits. We also had a great interview with Davis Schneider, which we released just yesterday. Second baseman, left fielder for this organization, who started with the Vancouver Canadiens and had a real breakout season this year after 5 years in the org. Moved up to AA, moved up to AAA by the end of the season. Great bat on him and a very versatile fielder. Great chat as well, so you can check that out. And then, of course, Jimmy Robbins. We sat down with a couple days ago, and we're releasing that interview tomorrow. But he's a pitcher within this organization, left-hander. One of my favorite dudes we've sat down and chatted with, not
Jimmy
to like rank anyone, but he was so great. Like he struggled with injuries over the last 3-4 years. And this is a dude who's finally healthy and seeing success, and it's really exciting, man. It's cool to watch this 24-year-old get on the field and kind of start to ascend up the ranks. Probably going to wind up in AAA next year is my guess, and a dude who very well, for an organization that lacks left-handers, with a repertoire. This guy has 4 pitches that he can move all over the zone. For an organization that lacks that sort of pitcher, very likely that we might even see him in a Blue Jays uniform in 2023. So again, Jimmy Robbins of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. That episode is going to be released tomorrow. All right, so there's the teases for our interviews. We're going to get into this thing. The World Series finally gets underway today. We're going to talk Phillies and Astros. George Springer had surgery on his elbow yesterday. No big surprise, but what does this mean for 2023? Silver Slugger Award finalists were announced as well yesterday, and there were plenty of Blue Jays involved. Catching experience is something that Adam and I talk about pretty frequently here on the walk-off. How much does it actually matter, though? Is it an intangible, or does it actually make a difference? We're going to deep dive into that subject. Anxiety continues to escalate in Yankee land about Aaron Judge and whether he will and wants to remain in New York. It is delicious. We'll get into that. And free agency starts 5 days after the World Series. But, buddy, rumors flying everywhere already, so we'll pick off some of the easy ones there and get into that. Let's start with the fact, finally, after almost a full week off, the World Series gets underway today. Listen, my baseball brain has a tough time wrapping itself around this rest. I know you're more of a football fan, Adam, than I am. You're used to a week between games at times, but this was not what I like. It felt too long. I can't even imagine, as the teams just finally getting to that World Series, having that momentum, feeling it, and then sitting around for 6 days.
I'd have to really go back through the playoff history. I don't remember this happening.
I don't
ever in my life. Like, I'm sure it has, but
6 days is a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot of time.
So was this too much rest? I mean, without the Yankees involved in this series to complain about things that affect both teams, we'll never know.
We'll never know. I guess the rest versus rust argument is kind of a moot point because it is affecting both teams equally.
Mm-hmm.
Both NLCS, ALCS obviously ended the same day. It's just, it's weird that, like,
it just lined up this way.
The pitching rotations are going to start with their guy game one for both teams. You know, nobody
this
had to.
This really, if anything, in my opinion, dude, benefits the Philadelphia Phillies. Because okay, if there is a team out of the Astros and the Phillies that lack depth, and we've talked about this whole playoffs, and the Phillies have made it a moot point. But if you just look at these lineups and start going into the bullpens especially, I mean, it thins out pretty quick with Philadelphia and a lot faster than it does with Houston. So having their top guys rested and being able to line up Aaron Nola to be able to pitch in three games this series if he needs to, game one, four, and seven. I mean, dude.
Yeah, no, you probably advantage Philly, I guess. Maybe not advantage Philly. I think Houston still has the better starting pitchers. But like you said, who does this time off help more?
If the rest is benefiting anyone, yeah.
Yeah, I would say you're right there. So good call. Good call.
Pitching, kind of the word of the day for game one, because it is Justin Verlander, Cy Young nominee. Or if not nominee, will be right away here for the AL side of things. And Aaron Nola probably the same thing there. You know, it's their two stud pitchers on both teams going head to head. It's going to be a good one, man. And I mean, Houston is obviously heavily favored here. But my question for you, Mr. Mack, is what needs to happen for each team to pull off winning the World Series? So let's say it goes the way of the Philadelphia Phillies here, and somehow they manage to slay Goliath.
Okay.
What goes right in that scenario for Philly to win this thing?
Well, first and foremost, they need to take at least one in Houston in this first two. They can't go back to Philly down 0-2. I would say they probably need to win both. Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
Take two wins here. And even then, I probably wouldn't say they're the favorites to win two out of the next four.
It just feels like the margin of error for Philadelphia is so much slimmer than it is for Houston, because they need their studs, Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, to put up W's.
And they need the bats to stay hot from Bryce Harper and Schwarber. Like,
My big one here, if the Philadelphia Phillies plan on winning this, Aaron Nola needs to have a 2014 Madison Bumgarner type performance. And he 100% has to outpitch Justin Verlander in this series. Every time they are head to head, which they're lined up to do so three times, if the management decides to go that way with going with their number one in three games, which most likely it's the World Series, right? The chips are down. There's no such thing as needing to rest your guys. This is all or none here. Everybody's available. And I think that they will go, at least the Phillies will go with Nola three times if they can. And again, so my big thing there is Aaron Nola needs to have the series of his life. And I think for Houston to win, where are you at for Houston to win this?
Houston needs to look. I'm not saying anything nobody's ever heard before. This is Houston's World Series to lose. They need to not, I don't want to say blow it. That feels like too harsh. They have to play to win, but they have to take care of business. It just comes down to that. I think
I've got almost the same thing. Like, I've got almost the same thing. Like, I really feel like they can't give Philadelphia life.
Here's an interesting stat for you, Scott. Justin Verlander has pitched seven games in the World Series. Do you know how many wins he has?
Zero.
Zero wins for Justin Verlander. Going for his first one tonight. Kind of a chaotic stat to hear from Justin Verlander, who is the runaway favorite to win the Cy Young in the AL. Am I overstating that?
No, you're not overstating it. I would say that's probably correct. And I mean, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. The guy has an incredible career. But yeah, that is a shocking stat to see. Zero wins out of seven starts in the World Series. Another interesting little tidbit here on both teams. Okay, let's start with Houston. Yet to lose a game in these playoffs.
Yeah, lossless. I will say with Justin Verlander, though, not untouchable.
They've dodged some bullets. Yeah, they've
He's not untouchable in that game one against the Mariners. Mm-hmm. Six earned runs in four innings.
He can be had.
This Phillies team can get to Verlander. If they can, you know, have a big first or second inning and put three or four runs on the board, that's huge. But I would say get to him early if that's the plan.
The other thing to think about here is no team has put Philly on the ropes. Philly has yet to deal with a must-win game. They've gone into St. Louis and swept them. They lost one game to the Braves. Mm-hmm. They lost one game to the Padres. Neither team has dealt with an elimination game. This is going to be an interesting series. I think that I think where Houston, if Houston's going to win this thing, again, they cannot give Philadelphia breathing room. You said it best, man. Houston really needs to probably take both games in Houston, and Philadelphia probably needs to take both games in Houston if they plan to, or at least one, you know, like it. This series is going to be a fun one to watch. It's going to be really pitching heavy in these first two games, but it's going to be the offense that wins it, obviously.
All right. So you asked me what needs to happen for either of these teams to win. I'm going to ask you World Series MVP predictions. Go.
Ooh. Well, I think I'm going to stick with what I was saying about Philadelphia, and if they are going to win, they're going to need a huge performance out of Aaron Nola, and I would say to the point where he is the World Series MVP. I think where Philadelphia can wind up hoisting the World Series and putting on those big fancy rings is if Aaron Nola just dominates, and he has the ability to do that. So my pick for the Phillies would be Aaron Nola. For Houston, I think that Jose Altuve is probably the guy with the most experience here. He's kind of the backbone of this team. He's got a ton of leadership. He's been there before. course, he was with the team in 2017 when they, quote, end quote, won the World Series. He was there last year. And he's struggled so far. So I think a big series out of Jose Altuve would be what puts Houston over the top, and I would predict Jose to take that MVP award. Who do you have?
Well, I'll start with the Astros. Jose Altuve was my choice as well. Career numbers in the postseason, 286 batting average, 908 OPS. Not bad there at all. Mm-hmm. 23 home runs, 49 RBIs.
In
79 games played. This postseason, however, has not been the case. 0.94 is his batting average through the first two series. He's gone 3-for-32 at the plate, mm-hmm. with an OPS under 300. That's not going to get it done, even though it has been getting it done for the Astros. If he hits 250. 300 this series, I think it's in the bag. I think the Astros.
It is so hard to take you seriously with those fucking glasses on.
Dude, I have to look at you every day with these stupid glasses. no, okay. I don't want to say Altuve because you already picked him. So I'm going to go with Pena.
Okay. I like that.
He's having a good postseason. He's not going to win Rookie of the Year because I think Julio Rodriguez. Has that wrapped up in the AL. But I think as a nice little consolation prize, Pena World Series MVP, that'll be a nice piece of hardware for him. I'm seeing like a 3-home-run game or something absurd out of the kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Something absurd. Over.
Whew. I like that because I put $3 on Jeremy Pena to win the MVP. Hey. And if he does, I'm bringing in $40.
Big
but
money.
I also put $2 on Brandon Marsh to win it. Hey. And if he wins, I win $202.
Wow. Very nice.
Just 101 odds.
You know, why not? Crazy things can happen. On the Phillies side, my World Series MVP is going to be Zach Wheeler.
Like it. Yeah.
I think if the Phillies are going to do damage, they're going to need both those guys, Nola and Wheeler, both going. I think Wheeler, you know, has the potential to pitch game 2, pitch game 5, maybe come in relief game 7, you know, if it goes that far. I don't know. I think it's going to be a good season or a good series. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. I mean, I'm hoping for the Phillies. I'm predicting the Astros. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat.
Yeah.
Probably in the same boat.
Okay, let's move on to some Blue Jays news here. Center fielder for the boys in blue, George Springer. Of course, he's had a injury-marred last couple of seasons. I know that everyone in Blue Jays land was well aware of his elbow injuries throughout the 2022 season. He definitely limped through them by the end, definitely trying to avoid surgery so he could stay on the field for this team. And to none of our surprise, wound up getting that elbow surgery to remove bone spurs just yesterday. According to reports, he is going to be ready for spring training.
Was it elbow surgery?
Yes. Removing those bone spurs.
I'm certain you texted me in the show notes, shoulder surgery. Nope. Mm. You definitely said had surgery on his elbow yesterday. All right, well, we'll have to edit the title of this video. What an idiot.
Well, I'm sorry, buddy. There we go.
The glasses don't mean I'm smart.
I've been working hard to get Adam the show notes a little earlier so that he can put his work in with the thumbnails. And look at this. Just a blunder here.
What an idiot. What an absolute idiot. I'm sorry, guys. All right, elbow surgery for George Springer.
So, according to what your thoughts are, we've talked about this many times. This isn't just your thoughts. This is yours and mine and a lot of the people in Blue Jays land. that it would probably be best for this organization if they find a way to move George Springer from center field to right field, where it's a little bit less of a strenuous position on his body.
Mm-hmm.
With him getting elbow surgery, and it's seemingly being that he should be fine for 2023, this is good news, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
I know we need to wait and see what happens here, but I mean, George missed a lot of time because of those bone spurs and had to like rehab his way around it without getting them removed and then try and manage the pain. So hopefully this just means that he's playing pain-free and doesn't need to.
Yeah, I mean, but okay, I'm not an expert in bone spur surgery, but a quick check with El Goog shows me that 6 to 8 weeks recovery, he should be good to go, fully recovered, fully healthy, fully healed, well ahead of spring training, if all goes well, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's one more injury in the past, like one thing to hopefully put behind us. Does that give me confidence that he'll have a pain-free 2023? Not even in the slightest, Scott.
No.
You know, if it's not this, it'll be something new. It'll be an ankle or a big old case of bad tacos. I don't know.
This surgery doesn't change your opinion at all on trying to get him out of center field, does it?
No, not even a little bit. No. Right field / DH. Let's go.
Yep. Let's go. The Blue Jays showing up big time when it comes to Silver Slugger nominations.
Yep.
We've got the list here.
We've got, no surprise, Vlad Jr. nominated. Bo Bichette, of course, nominated as well. Alejandro Kirk, very exciting for him. Matt Chapman at third base, kind of surprised me a little bit. George Springer and Teoscar Hernandez as well in the outfield. Outfield is stacked for Silver Slugger nominees. Let me just go down the list of outfielders here. Aaron Judge, Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Tucker, Mike Trout, Randy Arozarena, George Springer, Taylor Ward with the Angels, Anthony Santander, Adolis Garcia, and Teoscar Hernandez.
Now, like the Gold Gloves, Silver Sluggers are voted on by the coaches and management and maybe are a little less analytically driven than some fans would like them to be. However, this is more of a tip of the hat from their peers, if you will, the guys that management and coaches on other teams worry about when they come to the plate. So that's kind of what this award is based on. And I think if you look at the nominations in Blue Jays, amongst the Blue Jays players, the most likely guys to actually take home the hardware, in my opinion, it looks like Vladdy, Bo, and Kirk are the most likely to actually take the award. The other guys, I mean, it's great that they were nominated, but you kind of start looking through the numbers of the guys they're against, and it's pretty tough to imagine.
Well, Matt Chapman going head-to-head with Jose Ramirez, Rafael Devers, Alex Bregman. He's pretty close to the bottom of that list. The outfield, again, just stacked. I mean, Aaron Judge has one for sure, right?
Yeah.
Mike Trout quietly put up 40 home runs this year, right? Like, it's...
God, he's good.
Yeah. God, he's good is right. Alejandro Kirk, though, I think if I had to put money on one Blue Jay winning it, probably Alejandro Kirk.
I think that's a good story
this year.
I'm there with you. And if you go through the shortstop numbers, Bo Bichette is pretty dominant there as well, thanks to a absolutely massive September.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of bumped his numbers up from slightly above average for the season to elite. So... Bichette and Kirk, probably the most likely candidates. Vladdy's numbers are really good too, and if you start comparing him with the other first baseman in that category, he's right there neck and neck with a few of them. So I think that most likely those will be announced later in the month, probably after the World Series is when all of this will be decided on. and Gold Glove and Silver Sluggers will be announced. Pretty good turnout for the Blue Jays on both sides of the field, though.
What's it mean for you?
Nothing.
Yeah,
me shit
too.
All.
Yeah. Me too.
I mean, it's nice, but I mean, we got eliminated in two games in the wild card. Like, who cares? But
it's the same with the Gold Glove, right? Like, even if we sweep these awards, we have six Silver Sluggers and what, five Gold Gloves?
Mm-hmm.
It still means nothing. A nomination means even less to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm being pessimistic. I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure it means an honor to be nominated, right? Is what they say.
Yes.
So, it's a feather in these guys' cap. I know that winning awards does affect arbitration money. I don't know if being a finalist does. I'm sure it does a little bit. Maybe not as substantially.
I mean,
as
it's something the
it,
agents but. Are going to bring up, but I don't know if it means anything to the organizations, but.
Either way.
A little leverage, I guess. Yeah.
A good year from a lot of good young kids. So happy to see it. Honestly, Scott, this was a good year, man.
Yeah.
Like, I had 6.5 months of rock solid entertainment.
No,
every
I agree,
single
man.
Day. Like, yeah. Was the ending disappointing? Of course. But guess what? It's disappointing for 29 teams.
Yes.
Right? If the Phillies lose in 7, do you think Phillies fans are going to not be disappointed with the outcome?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Of course. So,
100%.
I'm not ready to throw batteries at them just yet, but it was a great season. You know, happy. Happy to be a Jays fan. It's a good time to be a Jays fan.
But there are changes coming.
There are big changes.
And I think one of the areas where we are going to witness some changes is the catching position. I know that this is... something that gets on some people's nerves is the talk of moving one of these catchers. But it just seems logically like the place where this organization will work from, right? A place of strength to try and bolster places of weakness. And I did something last night that took me hours. And basically what I did was I went through all of the previous World Series winners of the last 7 years. My plan was to do 10 years and I tuckered out at 7. I went through the World Series winners. I wrote down their catchers that were on the World Series roster. And then I figured out their years of experience. I did this for a few reasons. Number one, friend of the show, Craig Ballard, brought up a really interesting idea when it comes to how to bolster some of these places of weakness within this Blue Jays organization. And his idea was to take the catching position, open it up to the open market. Tell the other 29 teams, all three of these guys are available. Take the top two offers, no matter who they are.
Right.
Move on from those guys. Go out and get a veteran catcher and roll with that tandem. Now, his reasoning for this is that the catching position is a highly sought after position. It holds a lot of value, and that they've got some really good catchers between Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk, and Gabriel Moreno. They really do. So if you look at the Toronto Blue Jays catching experience between these three guys, they've got 7 years of experience. Okay. 5 years from Danny Jansen, 2 years from Alejandro Kirk, and 25 games from Gabriel Moreno. Now, Danny Jansen, yes, he has 5 years of experience, has had plenty of injury problems. And I know that friend of the show, Brennan Delaney, brought this up, right? And it's something like Kirk has something like 60% of the at-bats that Danny Jansen has, or 70% of the same at-bats in less than half the time. So Danny has struggled with injuries, despite having a breakout season offensively this year. But he only played about half the time. So that is definitely something to keep in mind when thinking about moving one or two of these catchers. But 7 years of experiences for all three of these catchers. Okay, so World Series catchers over the last 7 years. 2021 Atlanta Braves, they had 11 years combined experience between William Contreras, who was a rookie that year, and Travis d'Arnaud, who is a 10-year veteran. Okay. 2021 Los Angeles Dodgers had the least amount of experience of every tandem I'm going to bring up, with 9 years of experience when they won the World Series in 2020. Will Smith had 2 years at that point, and Will Smith was a... He is a superstar and one of the top young catchers in the game right now.
Yep.
Austin Barnes, backing him up, had 7 years of experience. The Washington Nationals in 2019 had 20 years of experience between Yan Gomes with 8 years and Kurt Suzuki with 12 years. The Boston Red Sox in 2018, 15 years combined experience between Sandy Leon, Blake Swihart, Christian Vasquez. Okay. 2017 Houston Astros, 22 years of experience combined between Brian McCann with 12 years, Evan Gattis with 5, and Juan Centino with 5. Chicago Cubs 2016, a quarter of a century of experience on that World Series roster. David Ross 14 years, Miguel Montero 10 years, and rookie Wilson Contreras with 1 year. Kansas City Royals, 2015, 11 years, and that was Sal Perez with 5, one of the best and probably a future Hall of Fame catcher. Yeah. And then Drew Butera with 6 years. In fact, if you look, other than Will Smith, no starting catcher on a World Series team had less than 6 years or 5 years of experience. Now, I'm not saying experience is the be-all and end-all. It definitely does not. Just getting some old catcher that doesn't hit isn't necessarily what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that maybe moving a catcher or two and going out and getting a Christian Vasquez, for an example, an experienced dude with 8-9 years who has handled a pitching staff and knows the ins and outs of how to call a game, maybe that is something the Blue Jays should and are looking into. It kind of surprised me when I started to look at some of them, like 25 years of experience for that Chicago Cubs team. 20 years for that Washington Nationals team. Like there's a lot of experience. And the fact that 9 years, which is 2 years less than the Blue Jays, was the lowest out of all of those seven.
So... the value of an experienced catcher, you're saying, would that have made a difference with Alek Manoah in game one against the Mariners?
These are intangibles.
Look, we know the battery of him and Alejandro Kirk and their best buds, and they play Xbox together and all these mm-hmm. things or whatever they do, right?
But would a David Ross type have gotten more out of him?
Or even just help settle the nerves beforehand, right? I guess is where I'm, maybe not necessarily when it comes to the pitch calling in game, but maybe a little bit of like settling the nerves ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't even want to go down that road, because then it sounds like I'm saying Alek Manoah, the game was too big for him, you know, like he was nervous. I don't want to go down that road. I will say Houston Astros. Three catchers heading to free agency this offseason. Mm-hmm. Martin Maldonado, Christian Vasquez, mm-hmm. and Jason Castro, all free agents after this year. Maybe they re-sign. Maybe they're in the market for a good young catcher. Maybe they have pitching that they can send back the other way. Maybe they already have one of the Gurriel bros and would like a second. Maybe Craig Biggio works in the front office and wouldn't mind having his son on the team. Maybe there's a deal to be made with Houston is all I'm saying. Am I crazy?
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And also all those catchers you just brought up, tons of playoff experience.
Exactly.
Again, I don't want to overstate how much experience actually matters, but it is an intangible and it is something to think of. And experience can be acquired, not necessarily need to go through the trenches and get it yourself, which is what this Blue Jays team has done in the last couple of years. Did you have anything to add there before we move on, buddy?
No. I love all of our catchers. I would be happy with any of them that remain or all of them that remain. My only concern is with Alejandro Kirk, and it's only based on the DH of it all and the George Springer elbow of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Love Kirk, but it's the same reason the Yankees.
We always have to bring that up, eh, buddy?
It can't be ignored, man. I know there's so much love for Alejandro Kirk. It's the same reason the Yankees cannot go out and get Shohei Ohtani if they lose out on Aaron Judge. They already have a full-time DH named Giancarlo Stanton, and they can't play him in the outfield 160 games when old Shohei is the DH, and you're not going and getting Shohei Ohtani so that he can just be a pitcher and not be a DH, right? So you can only have so many DH. Man, I'm over this. Let's move on to the next thing. I'm sick of this DH talk.
Let's talk New York. As the offseason is in motion for 28 teams, reports and rumors continue to surface from Yankees players. Okay, and this could be truly getting blown out of proportion. It is something that New York media does love to do. But if there's anything that us sports fans have learned over the years, it's that where there is smoke, most often there is fire. All right? I know John Heyman came out just the other day and said there appears to be some real concern within the Yankees ranks about their chances to keep Judge. The Yankees expect to be the highest bidder. Figure they'll start just north of his original ask of $36 million a year. They just aren't sure how badly he wants to stay. Heyman continues, Judge has never uttered a negative word about the Yankees, but there was a clubhouse sense he has a bitter taste in his mouth following spring training negotiations. A source suggested he didn't see why he should be below Anthony Rendon's annual $35 million a year contract. Which is a very good point. Buddy, is it possible that Anthony Rendon's contract is literally screwing up the entire market? He's a comparable that shouldn't be used as a comparable, right?
I mean, he's going to attempt to be a comparable, but... Mm-hmm. That's such a weird...
It's so unfair for agents to point at that, which is probably the worst contract in baseball right now, and be like, well, we deserve more than that. Look at what his numbers are, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny, but I also think that, you'd have to be naive if you were even the agent to think that that was a realistic argument.
Agreed.
Right? It's clearly a bad contract. You can't just point to a terrible contract and go, we deserve better. Because then everybody is worth more than.
One thing that all of this Aaron Judge stuff coming up has really made me appreciate is the front office of the Cleveland Guardians. Because my God, dude, the way they locked up J-Ram, Jose Ramirez, obviously a $300 million over 10-year guy. And they managed to get him locked up for half of what a lot of his counterparts would be getting on the open market. And I can't even wrap my head around it, man. Good on them.
Good on them. He must just love it there.
Why? It's Cleveland. But you know what? It is a market that has got a ton of history. It's a storied franchise. They do have the renovations, and the park is beautiful. They've got a history of a good front office that, despite not having a ton of money, is showing that they do want to win. I mean, there's lots of reasons for him to have wanted to stay with this organization, but to leave $100 million on the table, buddy, not a lot of guys would do that.
Hometown discount. You don't see it too often anymore, man.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's a family thing. I'm just looking right now. He is married, has a beautiful young daughter. He's not, doesn't look like school age yet, but maybe they're just happy in Cleveland and, you know, he wanted to stay and was just like, hey, give me the most you can possibly give me, but I want to stay here. Kudos to him. It's cool.
It is. It is very cool, and it's not something you see very often in sports as we watch Aaron Judge really squeezing the Yankees for every last dime, and he deserves to. Elite players deserve to get paid, and that's why these guys all go to free agency when they get the opportunity, with the exception of J-Ram. So good on J-Ram. I know the other thing about Aaron Judge, just to kind of keep in mind as we watch this all unfold, is what the consequences of him leaving will be for other players within the organization. Because I know that Anthony Rizzo has an opt-out. Mm-hmm. And he, even if he can't get more money, even if he's going to probably take a similar deal, I know one thing that Rizzo was quoted saying earlier this offseason for the Yankees when they just got eliminated was Judge single-handedly won us 40 games last year. So minus 40 games off our record this year, and that's where we're at.
Yeah.
I mean, these Yankees players, why do you, if the Yankees are not going to be a contending team, why do you want to stay there?
Well, especially, again, not to harp on the
fans. Because the fans
base.
Are going to make life difficult on you.
They certainly are. And look, we talked about this last episode, and man, did Yankees fans ever come to our comment section.
Yeah.
Most of it was in the ilk of be a man or some similar type response. Yeah. A lot of people were annoyed with us for suggesting that, or, and I guess reading into our take that like, the MLB or MLB needs to do something about the fans in New York. I am not saying a rule should be imposed that fans aren't allowed to boo. Like, for sure. Go ahead. But also, like,
there was one comment I couldn't agree with more. One guy was like, if you buy a ticket, go ahead and boo. And I'm all for it. Absolutely. I don't give a shit. I don't care to police the fans. Do whatever you want. All Adam and I were discussing is, has the climate within the MLB changed enough where the Yankees fandom is the exception to the rule, and these players don't necessarily view the Yankees with the same cachet that maybe they used to have back in the 90s and early 2000s. And with all things being equal, why would you want to go to New York to be booed when you can go elsewhere, make the same amount of money, same have the same ability to make or to win, right? Same money, same ability to win, and a fan base that is more supportive. I mean, you can call guys soft all you want, but why put yourself through it for what?
I mean, the Joey Gallo stuff, obviously, we all know about how he was treated away from the ballpark too. And again, it's one thing to even boo them at the stadium. It's another thing to like harass them on the street and just, again, whatever. Your free speech and all that. But did you hear the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa stuff?
Yeah.
Like, his treatment was pretty rough too. And sending death threats to members of his family.
Yep.
That's, you know, again, fans are welcome to do whatever they want, right? For sure. You love your team the way you want to love your team. But when your team sucks and nobody wants to come to your team,
that's on you.
You got to look at yourself in the mirror at that point, right? Like, I can boo my kid when she plays hockey all I want, but when she quits playing hockey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, what are we doing now on Saturdays, right? So
I have been loving all the Yankees fans just so upset that people are calling them spoiled, right? Like, they're just like, we're not spoiled. It's been 13 years since we won a World Series. And spoiled is probably the wrong word. Entitled is all get out, though.
Yep, big time. Yeah. Big time. Look, there's more parity in sports now than there ever has been before. It's unrealistic to think of it, like, of dynasties are just hard to maintain, to sustain, whatever. It's hard, and there's more teams spending more money. The rules are in place as such that teams like the Guardians can compete, the Phillies can compete, that spells bad news for the dogs at the top. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's good for sports. It's a bad thing if you happen to be a fan of one of those markets.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And if you look at who's spending the money, right? I mean, the New York Mets, they spent $282 million last year. The Dodgers spent $275 million last year. The Yankees spent $264 million last year. The Phillies spent $255 million last year. The Padres spent $237 million last year. Buddy, teams spend money these days. Those are the top five highest spending teams in baseball currently. And of course, that is with all of the bonuses and everything that mm-hmm. have been calculated throughout the year, all of the contracts with, you know, you pitch this many starts and you get this bonus, right? So it's including right. all the bonus money, which is more than you would look on just to see where the payroll is at. Nonetheless, that's a lot of money.
Look, here's what I want to ask you, and we can get into this more on Mailbag because we're going to have to really deep dive these comments. But we all know, like, it is no hidden secret in sports that there is a Toronto tax, right? A premium yes. that you must pay, you know, that fifth year to get a guy to come to Toronto. Mm-hmm. All I'm wondering is that something the Yankees are going to have to start doing? You know, is it? It's not the
dealing,
appeal.
The dealing with asshole taxes.
Essentially, yeah. Like, hey, we want... Who do we want? We want Jacob DeGrom to come to the New York Yankees. If the Dodgers also want DeGrom, maybe the Yankees have to pay a little extra. Mm-hmm. Right? You go to LA, be beloved. I mean, DeGrom's maybe a bad example because he's already in New York with the Mets and whatever. So that's a bad example, but you get the
point. I get what you're saying, though. Absolutely. The boo tax.
Boo tax, yep.
All right, man. Let's wrap up with a quick look at free agency as the World Series gets underway tonight. 5 days after a champion is crowned, free agency starts, and it should be a fun 2022-2023 free agency, buddy. Rumors are already starting to fly around. I know John Boy mentioned that Brandon Nemo very well could go to the Rockies for 5 years, $120 million, which is a great payday for Nemo. And then, of course, a report came out denying that by the Rockies, which you totally understand, right? I mean, free agency hasn't even started. Let's try and keep these leaks out. Mm-hmm. Very Blue Jays of them. The big money free agents are hard at work tying teams to their agents, right? Like these agents, they do everything they can to make it seem like everyone in the world is involved. There's a laundry list of teams that have already been stated interested in Jacob DeGrom, including the Blue Jays, because of course, any team with money is going to be tied to these biggest free agents. The Jays, without a doubt, are going to be an interesting team to watch this offseason. Some major changes could be coming. The Yankees and Aaron Judge saga, that's going to be incredibly interesting to watch going forward. The Padres are maybe the most intriguing team of them all. I mean, Mike Clevinger and Sean Manea are gone from the rotation at the end of the year. Johnson, Stammen, Martinez, Suarez, potentially from the pen. Brandon Drury, Josh Bell are both free agents. Profar is maybe gone. Manny Machado has an opt-out in 2023. Buddy, it is going, and the Padres don't shy away from spending money, so it is definitely going to be an interesting offseason there. The Trevor Bauer stuff is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody hates the Astros. Houston might as well just sign Bauer. Who cares, right?
Especially if they can get LA to pay half that contract.
Now, there are almost zero free agents from this year's Blue Jays. Okay? We know Ross Stripling and David Phelps are pretty much it. But if you look a little further ahead in 2023, some things to keep in mind which could affect the way the Blue Jays operate this season. Okay? Free agents after 2023 for the Jays, Hyunjin Ryu, Yimi Garcia. Now, he does have a club option for $5 million, which will probably be picked up. Anthony Bass is going to be a free agent. Matt Chapman is going to be a free agent. Teoscar Hernandez, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Raimel Tapia, Whit Merrifield. Right? So it is going to be interesting to see how the front office of this Blue Jays organization operates in 2022 going into 2023, knowing that they have a substantial chunk of guys coming off the books after next year.
Yeah. A lot of one-year rentals potentially to be traded. So
truly.
Man, it is going to be one chaotic offseason, not for, just for the Blue Jays, for all of really baseball. But it is exciting that the Blue Jays are going to be involved.
Let's leave it at that. We can speculate on who's coming where and who's going what all offseason long. But thank you so very much, everybody, for paying attention and following us to this point in the cast. If you are still watching or listening, please hit subscribe. If you have yet to do so, maybe give us a like. It's always appreciated. So excited for the game tonight. Phillies and the Houston Astros. World Series finally starting, man.
Here we go.
All right, everybody. Take care. Enjoy the game. Well, just a quick reminder, too. Tomorrow we're releasing our interview with Jimmy Robbins of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats.
Jimbo Slice.
Jimbo Slice.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.